to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return. I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Giants. Half time homies. Mr. Matt Weber on board. SP Futures up 22. NASDAQ Futures up 45. We were up about 27, 28 most of the day yesterday, and we turned around 10 points on the close and actually finished down on both the Dow and the transportation average. Had a big turn during the middle of the day and finished negative, which was strange because of the rest of the, I mean, obviously the market, the NASDAQ was up and, we're getting narrower and narrower and narrower. Amazon was up like $100. I mean, Tesla's like $1,100. Lou, how are you, bud?
Good morning, sir.
I was listening to CNBC and Dr. J was on talking about some, stock, you know, all the stuff that's moving are these high tech ones. And, some of the guys on Fast Money, it was the guy who dominated one of the, I think John was talking about one, but some other guy. We're pushing 20 times sales now, Lou, on some of these stocks. That's 2,000 range. When Cisco was, what, 25 times sales or something? I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's a combination of... it's hard for me to even put it... Tesla's up another $74 this morning. $1,194. I mean, for God's sake, Lou, why not make it 5,000, 10,000? It's a combination of degrading the dollar, shoving dollars out there that have to go someplace, that you're totally obfuscating the fact that individual people, if they weren't getting these checks in the mail, which are really helicopter and printed money, I think it's getting worse by the week in terms of people who were sort of unemployed, now are unemployed, they're actually getting laid off, and people getting cut off the hospitalization. The numbers are flying all over the place because the government's involved in every one of the numbers, Lou. I mean, it's scary to even try and figure out. I mean, I, for one, don't know if we're on foot or horseback here. I don't know how anybody does.
Yeah, I have to defer to your expertise on the valuation issue. I'm watching this from a perspective of what this means in terms of employment as people try to go back to work. And we see the rising number of positives on the COVID cases. The issue, and we have at least the mainstream press that I read, the Times, the Post, the Trib, and CNN and a few others have really lost the narrative that, you know, was the overall strategy of this thing, and are just reporting bad infection numbers. The narrative was, at least originally, was always that we were going to have a high level of infections because we don't have a cure and we don't have a vaccine. And as long as that's the case, and unless we're willing to completely shut the economy down, we were going to see this big surge in infections. So the question is, are we seeing a comparable surge in hospitalizations that threaten to overwhelm the hospital facilities, and or that do overwhelm them, so that we have excess morbidity from the virus as a result of our ability to manage the serious cases. That was the first thing, and then the second thing was, were we going to be able to are we developing a sufficient immunity within the population that we don't see another rolling wave of this thing come out in the fall. And that was always the narrative. We were going to manage, we weren't going to stop the infections. Because we were going to have to put people back to work. What we were going to try to do is manage the level. We've completely lost track of that narrative. I'm surprised at the inability of the White House or anybody else to get their arms around this thing and come back and say, look, we've had the first wave and that killed a lot of people, probably the most vulnerable in the population. The second wave coming through, or this rise now that we see as a result of putting people back to work, is expected. And now what we have to do is manage it so that our hospital facilities are not overwhelmed. But nobody's saying that. You're just getting this flat number of, you know, and pushing. I assume it's for political reasons, pushing this idea that, you know, we have more and more people sick, more and more people sick. We always were going to have that unless we were willing to keep everybody locked down until there was a vaccine or a cure. And I don't think that was ever the plan.
When they locked everybody down before they had tests, they had no idea how many people actually were sick. Well,
we still don't have a decent antibody test. I mean, we've got a test that will tell you if you've got it, but we don't have a decent antibody test to tell if you had it.
I think we do. A lot of people up here have been taking them. They're pretty good. They actually give you a rating. There's one that gives you a rating of how strong the antibodies are. It's pretty.
That may be the case in some with some tests. But my understanding from the last read that I did on the antibodies test is that it was giving a very high false positive rate.
The one that gives you the actual number.
Wasn't reliable.
There's one that's like the finger prick one that somebody came out with. Was it Abbott or somebody a while ago? It was supposed to tell you in 5 minutes. I think that's the one you're talking about. It gives you a huge amount of false positives.
Well, it in any event, the little, when they talk generically about an antibody test, is not good. They're saying it's not reliable enough to be able to say, yeah, you had it, and you can go back to work into an environment with a lot of flu positive people.
There's one that the people here have taken. Kenny took it. It's a blood test. So you're drawn blood, and how long do you have to wait for him, Matty? Was it like 5 days, 6 days? It's a while. And then he came back with his number, and he's, matter of fact, they want him to give blood so he can give plasma to people.
Yeah. Well, in any event, our ability to fight this thing is very limited. It's still limited at this point.
When I see these articles, and a bunch of them passed me by. The one I read yesterday was very interesting, talking about the spikes in cases and the fact that they all happen right when people lock people down in like every single country. Now, of course, you can statistically look at that a couple of ways, but what I'm saying is, do you ever read an article where people answer the question that you want answered? I mean, I've heard from how many governors and how many mayors and how many bleeps out there that these people from 25 to 35 are causing all the problem because they're going to restaurants and bars. I've heard no real rigorous study that is the case. And you know what else I haven't read? Are they sick? How bad are they? If they're just walking along like they got a mild cold, I mean, this whole concept that you can't get sick because you might infect somebody else, that's pretty new. I mean,
this is why I think there's such a political element here, and people again. The initially, the measures we put in place were not designed to stop the spread of the flu. They were designed to stop the media from publishing papers like we had here, like they had in Italy. Stacked up in hospital emergency rooms.
You have to move to a different spot, Lou. We can barely hear you. You gotta. Can you hear me now? Type thing.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Is this any better?
A little bit.
Okay. So you had people. The idea was to avoid the kind of crash of the healthcare system that we had in Italy.
Right, which we did.
You saw in Italy.
Yeah. Well, that was back when they put people on ventilators. Now they know not to. They have a couple of drugs that actually really help. So we're far down the road. We don't have a cure, and we don't have a flu shot. I refuse to call it a vaccine because it's not a vaccine. An antibody shot where you get ready for it. But I think if you go to hospital now with it, you're way better off than you were in March.
I absolutely agree because we know more.
Yep.
But again, the point was to avoid that kind of crash of the healthcare system. So we were able to do that. We did not overwhelm our hospitals. We didn't overwhelm our emergency facilities. And that's still the goal. The issue now is that a lot of people who are testing positive are people who are, or who have it, are people who are not going to go to the hospital with it.
Right.
They're younger. They don't have compromised compromising health conditions. They are in better shape. For many of them, it will be nothing more than a cold or a mild case of the flu, and they will recover, at least as far as we know. So, you know, we've lost track of that narrative.
Lou, wait a second. I'll give you a quick stop for a second. An attorney, which I think you still are somewhere.
Yes.
Whenever you say something in court or whenever you write something, you're very attuned to writing it in such a way that it does, or trying anyway, so it doesn't get misinterpreted. Correct? Me being on the air every day of the week, not that you're not with me, you are, I've been for a long time. It clearly is not what you say, it's what somebody hears. Whether I tell a story and they walk away from the radio and come back just to hear the punchline, which sounds like I'm a racist, which I'm not, or with something. So you run the risk of being taken out of context constantly. And especially
you run the risk of, in legal pleadings, you run that risk too. And obviously I run the same risk you do when I'm speaking on the radio.
But politicians absolutely, I think they sort of foster it. So you are right. Even if you take Trump on down, even though the two goofballs in New York, I think, totally muddled the message in my mind. The governor and the mayor, even though they're Democrats and I'm supposed to be a Democrat, I think they totally muddled the message. What people have heard, and I was telling Maddie, I was at this party in Indiana, they are convinced that everybody is supposed to stay in place till there's no chance of getting this thing. A lot of people, I don't know, if they just poured it through their own mind and they weren't out and talking to people, they didn't hear what you just said, Lou. That when you and Carl and Kevin, everybody's on his show knows that that once that thing got here and they couldn't stop it at the border in Seattle, for God's sake, and then they realized it was coming to New York from Europe, and all the, I mean, I'm going to say there's business people that should have a ring in hell that knew there was a problem in China and was sending their people there anyway. I mean, once it got here in all these different places, containment was absolutely not an option. I mean, we said on this show in March,
right,
for God's
exactly.
sake.
Exactly. Unless you're going to shut the account.
But even then, you sent people home. They got it's festering where you couldn't see it. It was never going to be gone. Right? How could it be gone?
That's correct. Yep.
I mean, but we have lucked out in a couple ways. Somehow or another, I mean, if you listen to this show, somehow or another, there's an immunity, Lou, for 40 to 50% of the people. Nobody has a clue why. I mean, I wish I had it. You know, if it's a blood type, I wish it was mine. If it's a gene, I hope I got it. You know, but there's an immunity, and why is it that Carl is? I mean, I've talked to our attorney buddy Greg, our mutual friend. I said, you know, Carl came in with this thing, and he said, this cruise ship that was out there for how many friggin' days? He goes, the message isn't that half the people got it. The message is that half the people didn't get it.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that video that I told you about that woman, the statistical analyst in St. Louis, the professor who looked at the cruise ship and at the carrier, the aircraft carrier, and said, here are our two Petri dishes for experimentation purposes. And here's what the spread looks like, and this indicates that there may be an initial immunity or an initial complete immunity or a very strong immunity in as high as 80% of the population.
Well, the numbers I've read on the cruise ship was 50. But those people are older, so maybe
right.
There's. But anyway, I mean, what Kevin put together, this thing in Elkhart. Elkhart had a flare in Indiana because everybody went back to start working in the RV factories, right? So they had this flare up in Elkhart. The other statistic seems to be, every place that there's any kind of a real test, is that 10 to 11 times as many people have been infected as the cases from the government are giving you. So in other words, if Illinois supposedly has 200,000 cases, the number is really 2 million. that have somehow.
I've read that, and I mean that as I understand it. That's based on the fact that a significant number of people have been exposed, but don't know it.
Well, they also they were sick and didn't get tested because it was impossible. I know the three people I know that I know had it. None of them got tested. The doctor said, "No, come in unless you're over 100 in the fever. We don't want you here."
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. They didn't get sick enough to either trigger the test or even notice that they had the disease. Well,
these people all knew it. Their temperature was 99 something. But Kevin went through the math. If you take 40 to 45% of people for whatever reason are immune or at least immune for a while, some of the theory is that they might have had a real bad cold this winter, and because that's a coronavirus, maybe the cold immunity you still have for a while blocks this thing too. I mean, nobody knows. I mean, I don't. I'm just telling you what other people are speculating. If you do the math in Elkhart, if you take the amount of people they claim that they've tested and have it, and multiply that by 10, you get to like 20% of the population. Okay, and if you take the 45% that can't get it anyway, that equals 65%. If you add the two together, which is exactly the number that Carl has. That when you have herd mentality, that's when the thing starts to drop of its own volition. Because 65% of the people are now immune. If one person gets it, they give it to less than one other person.
It's called the R factor. Yeah. And as long as it's less than one, the disease will not spread effectively.
So Kevin's going through these numbers, and he was predicting that the Elkhart numbers were going to start to drop pretty precipitously. Sure enough, the Elkhart mayor gets a hair up his fanny. It immediately starts demanding people wear masks and do this and the other thing. And like the next 3 days, the numbers go flying down. Now, it has nothing to do with the masks or anything because, you know, he only had 2 or 3 days of the new policy. And Kevin says, I bet you this guy's going to take credit for all this stuff. It looks to me like it was happening anyway. You know, it was going to happen anyway.
Of course.
Yeah.
The key point here is, and because we've lost track of the narrative, these numbers that are getting reported in the wrong way and for the wrong reason. And I don't understand why the leadership in various states, although I guess they are doing this in Florida and Arizona now, and to a certain extent in Texas, but why the national leadership is not getting up and saying, look, people, this was expected, and you know, for better or worse, the people who were most likely to suffer really serious effects from this, the majority of those people have had that happen. And so our goal now is to keep it from happening to the rest so that our hospitals don't get overwhelmed. That's a pretty basic concept. And for some reason, for political reasons or whatever, we've just lost track of it.
Well, we don't want to admit that the thing is that we got beat. Well, we get beat by the cold over here. We get beat by nobody ever says there's a bad flu in Argentina, so we're not going to let anybody from the southern hemisphere fly here in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, so now the questions that I think need to be discussed more elegantly than they are is we've got the virus is with us. It's going to have this kind of an impact. We know there's going to be lots of positives. We're going to try to limit that. But now the question to me seems to be, how do you limit this and keep your economy running? And I think that's the discussion that's going on in a lot of different governors' mansions right now as they try to manage this.
Lou, you got to make a single determination you have to have. If 100,000 people between the ages of 20 and 35 in Phoenix get it, they all survive. Is that good or bad? I think it's almost good.
Sure.
I think because
again,
you wouldn't get agreement on that. You wouldn't get agreement. You're the guy that really scared the hell out of me last week when you said, what if there wasn't this immunity and what if it was worse?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Because I've read, and I mean, I did this for, you know, part of my job back when I was looking at Baker in Chicago. I mean, as an employment lawyer there, remember when SARS rolled out?
Yeah.
We looked at what happened. What would happen if SARS got a toehold in the population and started to spread rapidly, and what that would mean. And that you were talking about, you know, a 5% mortality rate.
Oh, God, yeah, it was way worse.
It would have absolutely overwhelmed the healthcare system and what that would have meant.
Well, good news is if you had SARS, you were sick and went to a doctor or hospital. There's no way you wandered around thinking you were okay infecting other people.
That's correct. And so if it was not as infectious as we were initially afraid of, but we crunched the numbers on this stuff. And I mean, there's no comparison between that and the COVID situation. And so when I said that, I was thinking, and I was just saying, look, this is something we can live with. Now, it's easy for me to say. I haven't lost a loved one, but I am in the vulnerable population.
Me too. Group. Yeah, me too. But, I don't want it.
But I mean, that's if you're a public policy maker, that's what you've got to look at. So the questions now become: what can we do to deal with this with vulnerable populations? And I mean, I think the question that I've got, because it impacts me directly since I'm a season ticket holder, is what does this mean for college sports? And really the impact on colleges, the sports writers are finally starting to pick this up because they're starting to track these numbers and look at these numbers. But you know, if you're a Power Five conference, a Power Five football conference, for example, school, you got a shot at getting through this because of TV. If you're not, if you're one of the non-Power Five Division One programs or FCS, you're going to be in real trouble. And it's not just your football program. You're going to end up shutting down your athletic program.
Oh, sure.
Those are going to stop because there's no revenue for them. Football was driving that train.
Well, allegedly, Notre Dame, I get this from Frank, and he's pretty tight with the place still. He's a varsity letter guy for swimming. Their policy is when you return to campus, masks are to be worn everywhere except in your room by yourself. Why the hell are you going to play football and have a totally different set of rules for people playing athletics?
You're going to have to. They're going to have to isolate those guys, and they're just going to have to deal. I think what you're going to see with the actual teams is they are going to have to deal with this like they deal with any other, you know, infection. If you get sick, you get sick. You stay away from the team for your 14 days or whatever it is, and then you come back. And there will be a rolling kind of process where people are in facilities or in practice or out.
Lou, the interesting part of this is if we totally bleep can the economy, and then we do the same thing we probably should have done in May. What a bleep up by our politicians! I mean, this is insanity. I mean, why? I know it's an election year for everybody, but I'm as an economist, I don't see. I always thought, Lou, that naive me. That's what happens when you come from the South Side and you go to Catholic school. Naive me. I actually thought that somehow at the end of the day, that there would be people, there were rebel economists in my day, Milton Friedman and some of the other guys, that would write these thoughtful articles that actually got national attention, that the government was screwing up. And eventually he turned, pretty much all on his own, he turned the country into thinking that the Fed was screwing up, and the Fed realized they were and made the turn. Now, right now, talk about blowing smoke up somebody's behind. The retail sales numbers, oh my God, a record. This is Look, you've got to scrape away. I mean, how can I put this in a simple example? Suppose you had a cloistered community where 500 houses, and every day somebody snuck around, some little bird before anybody was up like Santa Claus, and dropped a $20 bill in everybody's mailbox. And at the end of 3 months, everybody starts seeing, gee, the car prices are up, some other price is up, and all of a sudden everybody's got a bunch of dough, and people are spending more. To find out the real health of the place, don't you think you should at least somebody somewhere should have the brains to say, well, let's subtract the $500,000 we trickled in everybody's mailbox. When we say retail sales are up 400,000, is that good or bad? Why aren't they up 500,000? Because half the place got laid off. I mean, how do we not have a before and after number on the free cash flow you just printed and sent to people? I mean, the retail sales being up 3% when you send everybody you're paying people, some of them double what they were making before for another month. You send everybody a check. Well, for God's sake, is that a good number or bad? I don't know. I think it's bad, probably, if you add the two in.
I think you're asking for a level of expertise that you're not going to get in the government if somebody's actually working on that. Somebody may be, but I doubt if it's being done as a priority, number one. And number two, I think our data streams are simply too numerous right now for this to be done in anything approaching, you know, a real time measure. So I think in a year or two, maybe 3 years, you will start seeing studies that look at this impact and can draw conclusions from it based on the data that people can accumulate. But I don't think we've got that capability
We may not have the capability, but not even asking the question. That's what's frosting me. That's a picture.
If you're a politician, let's say, I mean, a public policy person might be asking that question, but if you're a politician, or you work for a politician, and you ask that question, the response will be, why are you asking a question to which we don't have an immediate answer?
Well, I think you
want never propose or identify a problem unless you've got the solution in your head.
Well, because someday, somewhere, Lou, you're going to be Moses, and imagine the bitching he had the day the manna stopped. S&P futures up 23, NASDAQ futures up. I don't think that was a good day for him, do you? We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. Lou Michaels with us as well. And S&P futures are up 24, NASDAQ futures up 53. You're going to have to... Oh, there we go. We're moving here. Why don't you do sports weather and traffic, and I'll figure out how to get this one computer where I get the rest of the world stuff started.
I can do that. 35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Pretty quiet again on our area expressways, roadways, and tollways. This has been a theme now for about 3.5 months, and it really hasn't picked up. There's been a few areas where we've had some more traffic, but for the most part, it's been nice and quiet if you're coming into downtown. As far as
But if there is a crash, you're dead.
Right. As far as accidents or delays are concerned, none to speak of on the area expressway, so that's good news. We do have an issue on the tri-state. On the southbound side at Townline Road, this is in the northern suburbs, an overturned box truck on top of the on-ramp. That happened earlier this morning. This is on the southbound tri-state at Townline Road, which is Route 60 up in the northern suburbs. So keep that in mind if you're heading northbound on I-294, or if you're heading actually southbound on I-294 from the northern suburbs. Everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be another warm, sunny day, similar to what it's been the last several days. Much cooler by the lake, sunshine with a high of 83, but we'll be in the low 90s further inland. Right now it's crystal clear and 73 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies today with a high of 103. Right now it's clear and 80. Chief.
We're waiting for my machines to warm back up here. Lou, have you noticed, like I said, I keep talking about this Indiana party, and a lot of the people down there are very serious about it. And some of them, a lot of them are older. You know, and it's not like I'm throwing this off. I'm not. I got the alcohol in the car, and when I come out of the Home Depot, I'm the first guy to put it on the paper towel and make sure everything is wiped down before. I mean, it's not like I'm tossing this away. I'm not, because I'm not 25. But there's a mentality. We're losing our mojo here. I don't know how to quantify it. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, Maddie, I obviously ride in together. We do the show together. We become pretty close. He was telling me yesterday how much he misses basketball and softball. I cannot imagine being Maddie's age. I was playing handball at least 3 days a week, maybe 3 basketball leagues. In the summertime, I played in 4 softball. I mean, the idea that you worked all day, you blew off a bunch of steam, and there was a balance to life. And the idea of sitting at that age at home for 3 months watching this ridiculousness that passes for news, I don't know. I'm running out of – I'm home alone – 3 hours a night, and I'm running out of old baseball games. And I'm 60-something, and I don't need to be playing – well, I should be probably still playing basketball 3 nights a week. But the point is we're losing our mojo here bad. And I can't quantify it. I can't whatever, but I see it. It's like pornography. I can't define it, but I tell you what I see it, right? Am I so wrong here or not?
No, I mean, I think the malaise – I mean, people are seeing a general malaise setting in as a result of a lack of activity and a lack of social interaction. We have become comfortable with and have accustomed to a lot of dining out, a lot of social events, a lot of sporting events, a lot of recreational time with each other, and that's being chopped And that's you're going to generate a reaction on that. And so you're not. I don't think you're wrong in that. I did want to talk briefly about the Supreme Court and the decisions that have rolled out. I don't know if guys have covered.
We covered like maybe one of them. Why don't you go through them again?
The interesting thing from my perspective is a couple of observations, and obviously observations from a more socially conservative position.
You're not really conservative, are you?
Supreme Court jurisprudence is a lot like watching the Kremlin back in the days of the Communist Party in Russia. Who showed up on the Kremlin wall? Who was in favor? Who made a particular pronouncement or wrote a particular article in Pravda or Izvestia? And you would try to parse the words very carefully to figure out exactly what was going on inside the Kremlin. So that's sort of how Supreme Court jurisprudence develops, and people look at the analysis that's dumped on these cases is kind of crazy. It sounds kind of crazy to a normal person. But one of the things that is coming out of this is this lack of consistency on the part of the so-called conservative bloc. In fact, I've said this before on the show, the so-called liberal bloc in the Supreme Court votes in lockstep almost 100% of the time. But the conservatives, so-called conservatives, are much more flexible intellectually and at least in with regard to how their opinions are written. But you look at, the most frightening thing for an attorney in terms of analyzing Supreme Court jurisprudence, but any judicial outcome, is whether the judges are writing their opinions and making their decisions based on the law or based on the outcome. And if your outcome determinative, in other words, if you're a judge and you decide, okay, I want this to happen in this case, and I'm gonna write my opinion or make my opinion in whatever way it takes to get this outcome, versus here's what the law is and here's how I read the law, and I'll go wherever that process takes me. I don't think anybody is 100% either way, I think everybody is definitely 100%. Every judge is definitely 100% outcome determinative or process determinative if they happen to like the outcome. So I think that may explain what we've seen. For example, you have Judge Gorsuch, who writes the lead opinion in the, I think it's Blaylock, the case involving whether Title VII covers homosexuality and gender identity issues. Okay. If you read the opinion, he goes through a very convoluted legal argument to say something that if what you were doing was just writing your opinion along the lines of, here's what the law was originally intended to enact. Here's what the law put into effect. Here's what the people who wrote the law thought when they did it. And should we add a new layer of meaning to the law without congressional input? If that's what you're doing, and that's the process, then you don't make the decision that Judge Gorsuch did. You look at the statute and you say, okay, when the Civil Rights Act was enacted in 1964 and they added gender, sex, to the language of the statute, there was absolutely no discussion about homosexuality or gender identity or transgender issues or anything like this, because nobody at the time they drafted that statute thought that this would be applied to anything other than the binary decisions of male and female. So in order to contort the law or contort the language of the statute, some people would say torture the language of the statute, to get past what the original intent of the law is, you have to engage in the kind of verbal shenanigans that Judge Gorsuch.
Well, I'm going to ask you two questions here that are hopefully the listeners find them interesting as I do. But we've got these guys going through these contortions. We also still have a Congress that goes to work every day. Why the hell do they have to amend the Civil Rights Act to say that that's what they meant? They didn't mean it.
That's exactly right. And so this is my personal opinion, obviously. But, I mean, it's the same situation you see with Roe versus Wade. If you read Roe versus Wade, and I was basically neutral on the whole issue of constitutional right to an abortion until I actually read the decision in law school. And once I read the decision, I said, there's no way there's a constitutional right to an abortion, even though the court found there was one. But if you read the decision, you understand that they were basically inventing a constitutional right.
Why? I understand why we you and I have discussed, I discuss this more with you than anybody else because you bring it up. And I think people find it very interesting. We seem to have the Constitution, I'm not going to be Scalia and say that I was in the room when the guys wrote it, but it seemed to me that they were pretty cool at putting the separation of powers. Okay, and now it seems like half the time they're spending like doing the other guy's job.
I mean, that's we've talked about this.
Yeah,
that's the result of more and more federal intrusion into things that aren't federal, that were never considered to be federal in the first place.
But the Trump stuff, who was going to be president, Bush or Gore, or the Obama, which I considered he reached way too far in executive authority. Out of all the things that the liberals and the conservatives ought to be able to agree on, every one of those cases should be 9-0. And yet they're not. They fall down on, if it's my guy in office, I'm going to vote like for him, or if it's the other guy. Which brings me my next question. These cases that are all 5-4, many, and I've discussed this once in a while too. Are they really 5-4, or is there one guy that says, okay, I'm going to go this way, so it looks like there's a majority? Does that mean all the liberals get on their side, and all the, I'll say the real conservatives get on the other? There always seems to be one guy, whether it's Brennan or now it's Roberts, that'll flip like either way. But to me, that makes no sense. But I'm saying, is it really 7-2, and the two liberals go, let's make it unanimous on our side, or the two conservatives go, let's make it unanimous. I mean, are they doing this just for show, or is it really 5-4?
I think there's a, you're getting a mix. I mean, again, I'm not a follower of the Supreme Court bar the way some of my colleagues are, but I think that the so-called liberal bloc is much more outcome determinative. In other words, they want a particular outcome, or they see a particular outcome as desirable, and they therefore will vote that direction. And they really don't, they're really not interested in, they're not doing the kind of process process oriented thinking that I like, and that I think most lawyers like. I think there's much more intellectual flexibility and process flexibility on the part of the so-called conservative bloc, and that includes Roberts. The other point I wanted to make, and so as I said, you see in Roe versus Wade the invention of a constitutional right, and as I said, once I read the opinion, I said there's no way this should be the basis for this kind of a decision. This is something that should have gone through the legislature. Okay, that's an example. The second example is the decision that came out on abortion and by the way, I'm pretty sure that Roberts was probably going to vote in against the plaintiffs in that case involving whether Title VII covers homosexuality and the other things. I think he was likely to vote against it until he saw, or in favor of the plaintiff, and make it 5-4 until he saw Gorsuch say, look, this is a straight textual issue. I don't care what the intent of the law was. I can make the text of the language include sex. And so any form. And so that, you know, at that point, Robert said, oh, well, in that case, I'm not the Lone Ranger, and I'll have Gorsuch write the opinion. On the abortion issue, the abortion case, Louisiana statute, you have the situation where the same, basically a very similar law came before the Supreme Court a few years ago, and they reversed it. They said this law is unconstitutional. Roberts was one of the dissenters in that opinion who said, I don't think there's a problem with the statute as it's written.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think they're all really 5-4. I think they try and maintain their...
So that Roberts says that in the original, in the first case. Second case comes up, virtually the same law. Roberts has now the ability to say, I think the statute's unconstitutional, the statute is constitutional, and because he's got the votes, he can make it stick. And
right.
What does he do? He flips, saying, well, the precedent, you know, I don't...
That's exactly my point. He didn't like it the first time, but because it was going to go through anyway, he stuck with
exactly.
The conservative side. And now now he didn't like it. For those that don't know, the particular law we're talking about, I forget which state it was, basically said that if you're going to be at a doctor in an abortion clinic, that you have to be on the staff at like the nearby hospital in case something goes wrong, right? Or something along those lines?
Yes, you have to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles.
Okay, so do most doctors have admitting privileges at hospitals? I don't even know. I imagine they do.
My understanding is if you're operating a standalone like surgical clinic or one of these doc in a box type places where you're providing, for example, plastic surgery or whatever, my understanding is in most states you have to have it for them to license that facility. You have to have admitting privileges at a hospital. Now some of that is rent seeking, but there is a legitimate public health basis for it.
Well, what difference does it make when you say admitting privileges? Now, my particular doctor, he was one of these. He went to medical school and undergrad, like all combined together. So he shaved. Anyway, he's Northwestern through and through. Terrific guy. He knows all the people over there, blah, blah, blah. Well, now he moved to Highland Park, and he's got other places, too. But Northwestern, the idea of your doctor coming to see you at Northwestern, that went the way of the dodo bird 10 years ago. He may have admitting privileges, but I don't even know what that means. I mean, he calls the emergency room, he calls one of his buddies there, his specialist, and he says, my guy's coming over, take care of him. I don't know what that means in terms of admitting privileges.
I believe it means, my understanding is it means that the doctor has the ability to administer care in that hospital.
Well, nobody does in Northwestern, no. So nobody has admitting privileges, if that's the definition. That's what I'm trying to get to. He'll never show up. The last time I was in there, thank God, it was like a decade ago.
But if he was providing surgical services to you,
okay.
then in his offices.
But it used to be your GP would show up every morning in the hospital and visit you. I mean, way back in the day, but now it's different. And I'm going to say, I'm high tech. Whenever I had a test in the hospital, he called me before the hospital even said what the test was. He had the results, and he kind of ran the show from his office, even though nobody's on premises. So I don't. I guess that means he has admitting privileges. I don't know. I'm asking.
Yeah, it means he's got admitting privileges, but for surgical centers. Centers that are providing, you know, invasive procedures like an abortion or plastic surgery or whatever, it's much more important, as I understand it, it's much more important that the doctor be able to go to the hospital and the local, you know, hospital and say, okay,
right.
This is my patient. I'm checking him in. Here's what's happened and whatever. So that doctor can walk you right in there. That was a requirement for medical. There's a legitimate basis for it. I'm sure part of it is economic as well, but there's a legitimate basis for that kind of an issue, or for that kind of a requirement.
The Civil Rights Act was 55 years ago. Why don't these guys just expand it and say what they want to say now?
I I I I'm just saying that, this is the outcome determinative side of this.
Yeah.
And Roberts, so Roberts says in this abortion case, well, I didn't like it, but precedent, I've got to follow precedent. Great. He then promptly, on the next, the other case that I follow, which was this Montana school case involving state aid to religious schools, to parochial schools and religious schools, there was a very straightforward case in the history of the Supreme Court, maybe 20 years ago, that dealt with this issue directly. Roberts ignores the precedent in that case and gives his decision backing the plaintiffs. And there's a pretty good article, I believe, by Kevin Williamson in the National Review, who writes and says, you know, this is basically black box jurisprudence. In other words, the law is whatever these magicians in the black robes say the law is, and they're defining it, or it's coming to them from on high or whatever. But whatever it is, it's not discernible to the normal guys walking in the street who are trying to make predictions on how their business is going to be run, or whether they've got to hire certain people, or whether they have to have certain protections in place for this. It's not discernible to them.
Well, in the education case, I don't understand. I mean, obviously, I went to Catholic schools and paid tuition the whole way, my parents did, and I understand the church and state separation a little bit. When it comes to education, the way we do it here in my mind is so half-assed, I can't even.
Let me just say that the amendment, or that the legal principle that was in play, was an amendment to the Montana state constitution. It was something called a Blaine Amendment, and it was specifically aimed at Catholic schools and preventing Catholic schools from getting state funding. It was an anti-Catholic measure.
Right.
And it was enacted for that purpose back in the day when it was put in place.
Well, so the system is, the way I understand it, at least when I was there as a Ute, in Canada, they actually care about education, okay? Unlike here, whether we care about teachers' unions or whatever we think about, care about. And the idea there has been, in the city of Chicago, when the number is a couple years old, so it might be higher now, if you go to Kelly, if you go to Whitney Young, wherever you go as a high school, I'm going to say $17,000 of money follows that student to that place. All right? And if you go to Catholic school, you get nothing, even though the taxes of all the people that are paying. Now, in Canada, if the school is accredited and doing the in dispensing the educational part well, that check will follow you wherever you go. Now, there, maybe it's a little less.
I don't know about that. That sounds more like a provincial issue than a federal issue in Canada.
Well, I mean, Ontario, how many people in Canada live in Ontario? 80%?
No.
All right.
That sounds to me like something that would be a matter of the individual provinces making those decisions.
Well, but my point is that the idea that if you go to Marist, you get zero public funds, even though the exact same function is being performed there as being formed at Kelly. The idea that the property taxes don't go to, you don't even get a check for, when I talked to Mayor Daley years ago, when they were closing some of these Catholic schools, and I said, what's the story with these places? I mean, look at when you close one of them and you put 200 people into the public school system, now it's 200 times whatever it was at the time, 12 grand. That's insanity. He goes, yeah, it is. And I said, how much these schools that are closing, the grammar schools, how close are they in terms of dollars per student and staying open? Because they're all accredited. I mean, I'm not saying they're all terrific, but they're all accredited. He goes, if we could find a way to give them 4 hours a student, none of these places would have closed. Lou, that is so stupid. I can't even, you couldn't get a stupid pill that stupid.
Well, it goes back to, and I will say this, I'm going to generalize, so just
Right. You know,
that, hold on. This goes back to the idea, and it's very strong within the Democrat policy groups, that there should not be any education outside of state education. And it's a combination of social control, the reliance on the teachers' unions for votes and political contributions, and a certain ideological sense that people in private schools are crazy, and who want to send their kids to private schools are crazy, and will promote things like gun ownership, religiosity.
Yeah, but this goes way back before then, Lou. It's way back. This goes way back before then. I mean, there weren't even. I mean, when Roosevelt was a Democrat, there weren't any employee unions back then. I mean,
I'm just saying it's a combination of. I mean, the lack of. Well, okay, let's go way back. Do you know why Catholic schools started? And do you know where?
I don't know. Notre Dame started in 18 something, so a while ago.
Okay, well, Catholic primary schools started in New York and other East Coast cities around the same time in a direct reaction to the anti-Catholic education that was taking place in the public school systems.
Well, that makes sense.
Kids were being forced to pray in you know, Protestant fashion. They were being told, the Catholic kids were being told, the Pope was, you know, an evil person. They were being told a whole bunch of things, and the Catholic Church said, "We're not going to stand for this, and we're going to put our own schools together." And that was the start of parochial schools. That was the first private, big private school education push in the United States, in the primary, secondary, elementary, and high schools.
What's the one Pope Dante's got in hell? Was it Pope Innocent or something? What's he in, like the fourth ring of hell? He's got a Pope in there in hell.
I'm not really sure, but in the 1800s. You didn't have the guys that you did in, you know, coming out of the Medicis in Italy in the 1200s.
Yeah.
So anyway, my point is, there was a religious indoctrination going on in the schools on the East Coast around this time frame, and it was Protestant. It was very much Protestant, and the Catholics objected. And they said, "We're going to set our own schools up." So that's the genesis of this. But as things have developed, I mean, if you read Democrat policymakers now, I mean, there are senior Democrat officials who are saying, "We don't want any homeschooling. We want to make it illegal to homeschool your kids because they're not teaching the appropriate social mores in homeschool, and we need to get the kids into public schools so that they will be properly indoctrinated." I mean, that's it in a nutshell. Those are harsh terms.
When my mom was during the Depression, when she was going to school, she said the public schools taught you like everything. It was home ec. They told you how to cut your toenails. They didn't assume that you're being taught anything worthwhile at home. The teachers actually, I mean, she said it was they taught you everything. How do you determine if food is good or not good? I mean, because you learned all that stuff because they didn't think you were learning it anywhere else, and you may not have been.
That's what I got taught too.
Yeah, I mean, you were from
home ec, wood shop, auto mechanic class. We learned everything.
I think we learned how to
shampoo your hair. Everything.
Yeah, I think Maddie, you may have been part of the kind of the last group that got that. I mean, I felt I got a very comprehensive, you know, education as well. But again, the point of this was we don't want people in private schools where we don't have control over what they're being taught.
Well, calculus is calculus. By the way, I think Maddie was a little mistaken there. I think he was in tractor class, not tractor repair, not he was in Iowa.
No, we had auto mechanic class. We had every possible aspect of life, you would get a crash course on it. Now, you forgot most of it, but you at least had a baseline of learning everything.
This is in high school, right?
This is in middle school and high school, yes. And yeah. I mean, cooking, like how to cook, how to clean, how to do everything.
Yep.
And now your brother is a chef. Look how
it
worked out.
About a little bit younger than Maddie. My kids got a similar. Hey, these are life skills. I don't think a lot of that is being taught in you know, especially in the CPS or the Denver public schools that I'm aware of. I don't think there are a lot of those classes. On the other hand, you are seeing a number of high schools. And Kevin talks about this all the time. You're seeing a number of high schools where you are getting the kind of partnership with businesses that are designed to make up for these deficiencies in the high school programs, where the businesses are coming in and partnering with the schools and saying, okay, these are the kinds of job skills you're going to need. Here's how you read a graph. Here's how here's what a quality improvement or continuous improvement program looks like. Here's how you analyze or handle these kinds of machines. That kind of thing is developing, although it's not universal.
Well, anything you do in that regard, I mean, I'm a firm believer, and Marist didn't have any of that stuff because we were total college prep. But I actually took woodworking at a couple of the park districts and stuff where you could do that stuff with all of the, I don't know if the park districts do much of that anymore, but to me, it's all the same thing. I mean, fixing a car, designing a piece of wood, doing some kind of an engineering project, whatever it is, you have to figure out, okay, what am I trying to make?
Yeah, we did pottery. Yeah, we had like oven kiln and everything. We did pottery.
But the mentality is all the same, right? Maybe, yeah. What do I want? What are the materials I need? How do I do it? Do I have the machine, right? I mean when you get to Pullman, it was, how do we get a guy that knows how to use a screwdriver, the screwdriver and the screw all at the same place at the same time, right? Because you need all three. It's all, right. I mean, the computer is the same thing.
I was in an environment, I think, that sounds very similar to yours, Matty, where, you know,
I would have loved that, by the way.
Now, it was regimented by gender. I don't think we had any girls taking shop class, and I don't think there were any guys in the home economics program, but there was some crossover both of my kids had a basic life skills program in their high schools that said, all right, this is a checkbook and this is how you balance it.
Oh yeah, this we had to learn that.
This is how you prepare food, basic food prep. This is how you clean. This is what a vacuum cleaner looks like. You know, this kind of stuff.
The girls were not required to do shop or auto class, but the guys were required to do home economics. So we had to do cooking and sewing and all kinds
of
stuff.
Well, you can't eat an automobile engine.
But I remember I had to learn to sew, which I immediately forgot, of course.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I made a pillow, and they said basically bring in an old T-shirt that you like, but that you don't wear anymore because it, you know, you grew out of it or there's a hole in it or whatever, and we're going to turn it into a pillow. And so I had like an old Michael Jordan shirt, and like I made a Michael Jordan pillow, and it was a piece of crap, but I did it. Like I stuffed the pillow, I sewed it together.
Well, why did we stop? My cousin went to.
I don't know that we stopped.
Well,
I just think
Chicago,
you guys are
we have.
Far removed from school.
No, I mean my cousin went to Tilden Tech. He was a freshman, I think, when Johnny Kerr was a senior, of all places. And he said they had a garage where they had an aircraft engine in there, where guys took the thing apart and put it back together, and it ran. I mean, but there was welding class, there was electrician's class. He goes, I'll bet none of these places have that anymore. I mean, why not? I mean, what are we doing with the money?
I don't know. I'm with Maddie. I'm far enough away from this now that I don't know, and I don't have friends who have kids or grandkids in high school anymore. But my point, to go back to this case, the Roberts' decision to invalidate this provision in the Montana State Constitution is absolutely ignored the precedent that he said he was relying on in the abortion decision. And so again, it's a black box. Stuff goes in. This magic occurs, and then a decision comes out. And that's not good jurisprudence, and it doesn't build confidence in our courts.
Well, look,
it makes the Supreme Court more of a political animal than I'm comfortable with it being.
Well, flip to your president, the chief executive of the country. It's supposed to be the Congress makes the law, the judges interpret the law, and the administration essentially enforces the law. No matter who it is, whether you like them, don't like it, Obama, Bush, Clinton, Trump, the first thing they do is say, hey, there's a million friggin' laws. I'm going to worry about these 10 and the rest of them I don't care about. Reagan, well, we don't do antitrust. Okay, Dutch for 8 years. And where'd that get us? Right? I mean, there's guys that...
His focus was taking down the Soviet Union.
Well, but I'm saying, everywhere you choose what you feel like doing. I mean, Lori Lightfoot, she's going to go after every policeman trying to break the union.
Right.
That's
and
her
my
shtick.
Point is, you know, the courts aren't supposed to be that way.
Well, nobody's supposed to be that way.
We pass the law, we look at the law, we interpret it, and wherever it takes us, that's where we go.
Lou, nobody's supposed to be that way. The people who I know that have gotten, $400,000 stolen from them out of their bank or something, a mid-sized bank, and somebody defrauded them, they're not supposed to call the FBI, and the FBI says if it's under $1 million, we don't care. I mean, come on. I mean, but it's happening at all levels everywhere. People do whatever they damn well please that are in government these days. I mean, the guy who went after Blagojevich, and I never liked the man. You know, I never wanted to see the guy governor when he was elected. But the fact that what percentage of the U.S. attorney's budget went after Blago? He didn't care about bank fraud. I mean, come on. I mean, but everything these guys do.
My point is that the courts are supposed to be different. I don't have a problem with executive or legislature setting priorities in terms of what they're going to go after. That's what we choose or put them in there for, but I don't want the courts doing it.
Well, but you just said, that the Civil Rights Act was 1964.
Correct. Right?
And nobody back there, I don't think, even wanted transgender. I mean, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure it's all in the LBGT of all the letters in there. I don't know what half of them are. Well, I know most of them are. And I'm a live and let live. I'm not going after anybody for whatever they want to do. But the point is, the thing is 55 years old. I mean, Congress is not doing their job. Okay.
Agreed.
So that puts the court in a position.
I don't want to legislate through the courts.
But now the courts are in a position. They've got the case. What do they do?
I know. And so what the court should have done, my opinion, is they should have said, you know what, the statute never contemplated this. If you guys want, and they look at Congress and say, if you guys want to amend this to explicitly include homosexuality and other gender identity issues or gender identity as part of this, amend the law. Make the hard call.
I would not have an issue with that, honestly. But what if they say no? Then you can discriminate against these people?
Well, I mean, if Congress says no, then that's when you go in and say, all right, I want new congressional representatives.
But that's a process. I mean, when do you ever get to vote for somebody and even know what the hell the guy is going to say or do?
Again, you get the government you deserve. That's another issue. I just don't want the courts in our system. I don't want the courts doing this kind of legislation.
In immortal words of my dentist, Lou, I finally got to go see again this week. In immortal words of my dentist, when we invaded Iraq, now he was so against me voting for, who the hell did I vote? It was one of the Bush things. I think I might have voted for Gore, I don't know. And I didn't really see much to choose between. If ever there were two people that were exactly alike, been in government their whole life, and their families were, was it Gore and Bush? I mean, I don't know what the choice was.
Bush should at least run a baseball team. That was enough to make me vote for him. I don't think Gore would run anything.
He was a face man at a baseball team. Anyway, I like Bush. So, I could just easily have voted for him. I actually didn't mind either one of those guys. I don't like the last couple times. I didn't like either side. But he says to me, I can't believe we're invading Iraq. But he was so against the abortion thing, and he voted for Bush simply because of that. And I said, Doc, you know, buddy, when you vote a single issue, you got to take what comes on the rest of them. And he looks me right in the eye and he goes, you know, you're right. He goes, I was so anxious to vote for the guy because he was anti-abortion. Of course, he didn't do anything about it. Bush, I mean. Not that he should have or whatever, but he didn't. And he goes, now I got to take all the rest of the crap, basically. We're invading some country we got no business invading.
I see that we have run over our time, and interestingly enough, I have a dentist appointment in 45 minutes.
Good
so
for
I'm
you.
Going to have to check off.
All right, buddy, take care of yourself. SP Futures up 24 now, NASDAQ Futures up 68. We'll come back. I'll actually go around the traffic, weather, sports. We'll wait till the bottom of the hour. But Europe's up big, so Maddie, we'll come back after break, and we'll talk.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-4000. 8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening. Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, just from Matt Weber. SP futures up 24, NASDAQ futures up 69. Tesla just reported that they delivered 90,000 cars in the quarter, so the stock is up like another $100. That's just a couple $100 like every day.
What do they normally do in a quarter?
This is the first time. Well, 90s they're spiking up.
I mean, you see them everywhere now.
Yeah, they're around.
They have their really nice, expensive versions, but then they seem to have really kind of what I would consider cheaper, more economical-looking versions of Teslas that are out everywhere.
What's the range? I mean,
I don't know. I can probably find it pretty quickly, but
we're looking for $2.5 million on the farm payroll, and we're looking for 13% on the unemployment rate. Is what we're looking at today. We'll see how that comes down. You and I talk about it a lot. I mean, it's. I think you need some numbers. You need some data. What is that? Like Kevin always said, bad data, bad decisions.
Yeah. By the way, Tesla's range, according to this, from 35,000 to 125,000, depending on the model. So you can get one for 35, which I think I've seen a lot.
How far can you go on a charge?
I'm seeing a lot of those. I think like 300 and some miles.
And that's with the air on, the lights on, everything. Windshield.
Well, I think that's probably the max.
Okay.
So probably not under those conditions. They claim that range of distance for the Tesla is between 315 and 335 miles.
Remember Dr. J's story about the guy who tried to drive from L.A. to Vegas?
Well, that was like 20 years ago. I assume the technology's improved a little bit.
Well, but your air conditioner's got to be going full bore.
Right.
So there's no way you're doing 300 miles in the desert.
I wouldn't think so. There's also a lot more charging stations now, which is helpful.
Well, how long do you have to pull in to charge?
That I don't know. I could probably find that out quickly, too. I do like the idea of an electric car. I don't like the idea of buying a Tesla because I hate Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Well. But I do like the idea of an electric car, and I know some of the other companies are doing them, and I'm just going to wait a little bit, maybe till they're, one, I don't need to buy a car, but two, until maybe they're a little better and a little cheaper. But, you know, screw this whole idea of, you know, living on gas. I'm over that.
How do you think, where do you think the electricity comes from?
Well, not directly.
Well, I know it comes from the plug in the wall. I get that, but I mean, what's the reason why we have gas furnaces in our place and not electric is because a gas furnace is like some, depending on when you get, is 90 to 95% efficient. I mean, it's way more efficient than burning the natural gas 40 miles away and sending it over wires to then be heat up stuff in your house. It's not even close.
It's better, much better for the environment, though.
But natural gas is...
But we're not running on natural gas.
What I'm saying is if it's coming from a coal-fired plant, you're not doing anybody any favors.
How many are those?
Not very many left.
Yeah, those are gone.
Well, no, not really. I bet... You know what? Google what percentage of the power in this country is still coal-fired. I bet it's 40.
Oh, that's higher than I would have thought. I'll Google it. By the way, it says it can take anywhere from an hour to 12 hours if it's completely on empty to charge your Tesla.
All right, so if you stop halfway between Vegas and L.A. for breakfast, does this enough to boost you the rest of the way? I don't know. You must have to have 220 going into the thing.
If you're on a full charge, it says it's Vegas to L.A. is 270 miles. If you're on a full charge, theoretically you can make it there without stopping. But like you said, if you're blasting your air conditioning the whole way and you're in some traffic, which you probably will be, you know, maybe you need to stop somewhere for an hour. And I think what people do is they go to the mall or they go to Target or they go to a chain restaurant. And a lot of those places have chargers in the parking lot.
In the desert, yeah.
Well, no, but I'm sure there's a community of some kind in between. But maybe not. I don't know. I've never made that drive. I would like to make that drive. I did. I had friends that did it, and I chose just to fly back from L.A. They saved like a couple $100 flying from Vegas, so they drove from L.A. to Vegas, and I just said, I'm just going to fly from L.A.
Well, I had to do a seminar in Vegas, and then I rented a car and drove to, I don't know why, I just want to make the drive like you did. And I left very early on a Sunday morning. You should do it once, and bring your whiff, because it is hilarious. The people show is hilarious.
Is it cool scenery? It's like in the desert, right?
Oh, yeah, you're out in the middle of nowhere.
I assume there's some beautiful
mountains
and cliffs.
Oh, yeah. This is the weird part. I left like, 6 o'clock, right? 7 o'clock, somewhere in there. So I stopped to get gas because I had been driving around in Vegas. I stopped to fill up. And I walk into the convenience store that's attached to the gas station. All the people in there, it looked like they didn't even sleep the night before. They're just wandering like zombies up and down the aisle, grabbing like chocolate bars and cupcakes and stuff. And just trying to feed the hangover. Well, I don't know how these people are even walking. So they get back in the car. So then you go about another, 100 miles. Now it's breakfast time. And there's a stop where there's the McDonald's, the Burger King. They are mobbed. Because now everybody has got the munchies even more.
Oh, yeah.
So, but the radio, but it's not any kind of fun drive because it's two lane going 80 miles an hour the whole way. So it's like driving the Dan Ryan for 3 hours.
Yeah.
You need a passenger who could look at the scenery, but you're
pretty focused.
You're four car lengths away from somebody going 80 miles an hour, both lanes full.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, you're on an Indy 500. And, there's a radio station that every time you flip over the mountain where you lose the signal, you hit the scan and you get the same guy comes out again over the next mountain range. But it's, it's a drive you should do once.
Yeah.
And then if you sit there
I would like to do the Pacific Coast Highway drive.
Oh, yeah.
Now that would be something.
But you sit there and go, if I were to come across this thing in like a stagecoach or on a horse, that dude was built to sturdier stuff than this guy.
Yeah.
You can see the heat, the waves coming off the ground. I mean, it's bizarre world. Literally, you walk out, you can see these waves, and you go, what are those things? And they're heat. anyway.
So, real quick, the U.S. electricity generation by energy source percentages, fossil fuels, 62.7%. Natural gas, 38.4%. Coal, 23.5%.
Okay, it's down a bunch.
And then petroleum, 0.5%.
Well, what's fossil fuels? If it's not,
I mean, it's a different category. I know everything's sort of related, but
well, Fossil fuels are coal, oil, and natural gas. What else are they?
It just says fossil fuels is 62, natural gas is 38, coal is 23.
Well, that adds up to 62, doesn't it?
No, that adds up to 100. Or actually, that's over 100.
I'm saying the 62 is part coal, part natural gas. And then you got nuclear on top of it, and you've got other stuff.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I can still do some math on Thursday morning, but yeah, it used to be a lot more. But the natural, what they're doing now is, especially in places where you have air conditioning, is your natural gas plants are actually closer, and they can fire them up like at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning on a real hot day, and can boost like the downtown load here in Chicago. The coal fired plants, I mean, those things never go down. Neither do the, your nuclear plants. I mean, it's a different program. But, I mean, yeah, but the thing of it is, it's an awful lot of money for a second car, man. I mean, there's no question, but if you and I, well, you'll be doing this one of these days. You and Jill, there's a couple little Maddies running around, little Jills, and you're going to have a place in the burbs, and you're going to have special purpose vehicles. There's going to be one where you can pile the whole family in and drive to L.A. if you wanted. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if you or Jill didn't have a little electric thing to buzz back and forth to the store with me. I don't need to take the Suburban to get a boat, but that's the only thing I have. Right?
Yeah, but I want a Vespa scooter.
Oh, yeah, when you're 40, it's just what you need.
Well, my stepdad, who is in his 60s, he has gone back and bought a bunch of old, he's very like handy and mechanical. He went and bought a bunch of like early 80s and late 70s motor scooters. That were like, that you, kind of like you with your trucks. He like drives across the country and gets these things.
Wow.
And, gets them really cheap, fixes them up, puts like the original, you know, colors and stickers that you can buy on the internet and everything, and then like polishes the chrome, and he's got like four of these.
Wow, good for
him. They run like perfectly. But he's older, he's, you know, an older guy, and he rides them around. They're actually pretty sweet.
John's cousin Danny used to drive around one of those things. Do you see him in the city?
Oh, yeah, you see him. Like, the problem is here, you can only really drive him for about 4 months.
Yeah.
But they're great to get around, you know, if you're just kind of bopping around the north side. Not that anyone does that anymore.
No.
You can't do anything.
No, I know everybody thinks that I'm very concerned. I've never seen, other than, well, I've been bitching about the Fed or the consumer price thing being wrong for a long time. Okay, so that part everybody knows I bitch about. But the ability now with these economic numbers, man, the idea that they're telling you that things are okay. I mean, you know. I mean, now that you're a mature male, did Jill do that to you? Did she make you this mature? Were you going to be this way on your own?
I think it was inevitable. As I've, you know, I turned 37 in a couple months. I think it was bound to happen, but she probably accelerated it.
I think getting the dog was a good move on her part.
Yeah,
because now all of a sudden you're responsible. Yeah, plus the dog tells you what to do.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Anyway, so even you know something's wrong, because people are getting checks, they're spending, and oh, guess what? Last week I heard one of the dumbest things I ever heard from a newspaper guy or a guy on TV. It's amazing. Americans are saving more. Manny, duh. I know I don't have a job. I'm getting for 8 weeks more cash from the government than I ever had in my job, but it's all going to end in 8 weeks. Not anybody, not even in this country, not even the people, the young people, people say are dumb when they're not, even they know I better save some of this.
You have a combination of two things. You have, one, a huge percentage of people getting the $1,200 check. Then you have the huge percentage of people that got laid off and, like you said, are getting this extra money, and either it's more than they were making, or it's the same as they were making, or it's less than they were making, but they still have no guarantee of getting a job back, so they're saving it.
Yep.
And then you have, like, the you and me who are still have a job, still working, still getting paid, but there's nothing to do to spend your money on.
Right.
So the credit card bill is way down compared to what it would normally be, because you can't go on you can't travel, you can't go to bars and restaurants, there's not much you can do.
Unless you have a wife at home on Amazon all day.
Well, that's something you have to work. You have to fight against.
Of course. You got to fight back at. Yeah. But no, you're right. I mean, these numbers, you're going to have retail sales up from 2 months ago. You just sent people the dough. But you know, you were telling me on the way in, somebody who's getting this check all of a sudden is, say, at home in the the company hasn't really told them whether they're in or out, maybe they're picking up their hospitalization or doing something. Even though you're getting this money, if the phone rings and says, no, we're out, you're not coming back, now when does the hospitalization leave? That's a problem.
It leaves when they tell you you're not coming back.
Yeah, now, if you start taking that check, which was looking pretty big before, you start paying $1,000 a month for the hospitalization, there goes some of the check, right?
Yep.
The way the numbers are being bandied about, they're being used for anybody's point of view, which I don't necessarily think is the way you should do something when you're on national TV. I don't do it here, and it's probably, it's not like we don't all necessarily, pick and choose a little bit of the numbers we use, but between all the people that come on the show, Manny, we're pretty straight with these numbers. If I say something wrong, Kevin calls me out in a second. And then if Kevin goes too far, then we hear from Frank. It's not like we don't have our own critiquing society here. You ever see the show that is so self-critiquing as this one?
No, I like it, though.
Yeah,
it's sort of how it's supposed to work.
We only have 10, 15
seconds. You kind of settle, with an intelligent resolution, usually somewhere in the middle, and that's kind of a good thing, I think.
Well, I am so afraid of the downtown area here. It's becoming, the disease is becoming worse than the disease. How's that for a stupid statement? We're still talking about these buildings downtown, 8 and 10% occupied. I don't see it changing. We spin forward 4 weeks, Manny. Do you see them 40% occupied? I don't.
Four weeks? I don't think so, no.
Well, so then what's going to be different about July that was different than June or August? We're not going on any kind of a pace here. There's people that are talking end of the year. And even that's, are we going to be talking about canceling next year's stuff already? I think we are. S&P futures now up 38, NASDAQ futures up 107. Big movers today. Tesla's up $101. That's a number. Amazon's up 28. Again, it's up over 2,900. Come back with Mr. David Andelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 408-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Mel Weber. We had, how many jobs did we create here, Manny? It was
4.8 million regained jobs.
The S&P futures up 40 on these numbers. Between vaccines and everybody going back to work, I just don't buy a lot of it, to tell you the truth, but that would just be me. We'll go through those numbers in a second, and I'm still trying to get this other stuff rolling here. We'll have it to say. Here we go, Manny. Europe, we've got big moves over in Europe. The DAX is up 222, that's 1.8%. FTSE up 48, that's 7.8%. CAC round up 77, that is 1.58%. We've got Hong Kong up 687, it's almost 3%. This is all, and a lot of this came because of the vaccine hopes yesterday out of Pfizer and out of Lilly. So those are like real companies, so people are sort of believing that. Shanghai up 64, 2%. Hang Seng up only 24. No, they were up yesterday. We've got bonds up two points to like 66. We got the Bund minus 0.40. Japan positive 0.04. And we've got, what else we got here? Betty, why don't you do traffic, weather, sports, and then we'll get the rest of this.
I can do that. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a couple of crashes in the area. Veterans Memorial, I-355 northbound at 159th Street. There is a crash that's been moved to the left shoulder, but a bit of a slowdown as you navigate around that. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Stevenson has looked good all morning, as has the Eisenhower, so that's good news. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy as well. We did have a crash earlier this morning on the Tri-State, southbound at Townline Road up in the northern suburbs. It was a rollover box truck. It's now on the on-ramp at Townline Road getting onto the Tri-State southbound side. So not a lot of resulting congestion from that, but that's something that has crews on the scene working on that to get that cleared up. Everything else looking good out there as far as the expressways are concerned. Off the expressways out in the western suburbs, Crest Road at Roosevelt, there is a crash. Actually, one other thing just came across here. It looks like the Dan Ryan, there is a crash now on the Dan Ryan. On the outbound side, just before 47th Street, there is a crash blocking the two left lanes now. So downtown to 95th is going to start growing here. Right now it says it's just 15 minutes, but I imagine if the two left lanes are blocked at 47th, that's going to continue to grow. So keep that in mind if you're heading outbound on the Ryan. Weather today, similar to what it's been the last few days. Lots of sunshine, hot, a high of 83 closer to the lake, but further inland we could touch the low 90s for a high. Right now it's clear and 74 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 103 today. Right now it's clear and 81. Chief.
We have oil's up 24 cents, over 40 bucks, 40.06. Brent up 31 cents, 42.34. Natural gas up 1 cent to 168. Got gold actually down 370 because that was good news. 1776, silver down 5 cents, but still over 18. 1816. These numbers, very interesting. Again, the trying to try and figure them out is hard. I mean, Dave, we have David with us.
Hello,
David. How are you? I'm just looking at these numbers here. This is out of the household report. This is the A1 number from the Fed. Last month we had 137 million people working. Now we have 142. So we had 20.9 million people out of work last month. Now we have 17.7. But the number of people who are in the third column, we don't know what they're doing. That went from 101.8 to 100.2. Okay, so since it's all started, let's say since the beginning of last year, December, is that a good place to start, Matty? The end of last year? Probably.
Yeah.
We have 16.5 million people less employed. So that number is still... Now, whether you think these monthly numbers are crazy back and forth with all the unemployment in the state having problems on the unemployment or not...
The unemployment rate now sits at 11.1%.
Correct. But, all right, but here's what I'm getting to is... We've taken 16.7 million people that are no longer working. We've added 11 million, make that 12 million to the unemployment. The other 4.5 million are in this other column. So they're not being counted as being unemployed. Now, maybe 4.5 million people either are not on the rolls, like Carl talked about, his daughter couldn't get through the massive bureaucracy that's Florida, and wasn't getting her check, so she would not be counted. You would not be counted if you're not getting it. Or if people took the opportunity to early retire or those kinds of things, or just plain retire. And the fact is we have, if you add the two together, there's 16 million people that are less working since December, which is a lot, which is 10 or 11% of the population right there, and that's a... And I, as I mentioned this week, David, I think that these numbers are, they're bogus. And when I say they're bogus, correct me if you think I'm wrong, David, is whenever things are going good, the numbers are always better than they are. Cause people who have, shall we say, jobs that, are contract 1099 people, those kinds of people are being hired. And then and we won't know about them until January when they send their check in. And I think the amount of people that have second jobs and jobs that maybe weren't ever counted in the first place, anybody in the music industry, I don't know that, are any of the people who are in theaters, Matty, or any of those people salaried? I doubt it. They get paid per performance, right?
I would assume so. I don't know, though.
None of those people are working. I think even in the, David, you know, you're more sophisticated about this stuff than me. People in the symphony, are they salaried or do they get a check every night? I think they get a check every night. I'm not sure. So
I think so too.
I think there's massive swaths of people that have a you know that make a living that are not in these numbers. I will absolutely guarantee you on my mother's grave that if you counted everybody who is making income from some place, it's way more than 11 million people are not making that income now. I'm just saying. Maddie, you got any disagreement or David?
It's not a disagreement, but it's kind of implementing things. One, your original thought that you have suspicions about the data gathering. Well, we've had those for years.
Yep.
When you have Bureau of Labor Statistics and you use census workers, this is anecdotal, I'm not saying it's pervasive, but you know, they interview those in New York City and it's raining and I'm supposed to be out counting, but I'm not, and I might get out tomorrow, I might not, even though the deadline's approaching. I mean, that tells me something, even though it's anecdotal. But beyond that, just with the pandemic, you know, people are off the street, and that includes counters, and who knows if they get it, whether we get the data, whether it's email or phone or whatever, how reliable the data is. So I think now more than ever with the pandemic, the data, the statistics are very, very suspicious. Beyond all the headaches that, you know, you were talking about with Carl's daughter. I mean, I think this data is highly, highly, highly suspicious now more than ever. Maybe when things settle down, it'll get more accurate. But beyond, more than ever. I mean, the one area that I've kind of, I wouldn't say split with you, but kind of delved away or leaned away from you, is on what I've called, you know, for 4 years, the underground economy. And, you know, before it was eBay and Amazon, and those are big numbers. Just people at home selling their goods, starting up little businesses, being merchants, whether on the side or, you know, now they're making money and so they're leaving their jobs or whatever. And they're not technically employed. They're not counted. But now with Shopify and Etsy, I mean, all you have to do is look at the chart. Early April, Etsy was $35. It's now $111. And I'm not saying, you know, it's all, you know, it isn't all, you know, PE, multiple expansion and that kind of thing. You know, $350 on Shopify, now it's over $1,000. I mean, I'm not saying it's all real. A lot of it is algos and, you know, momentum pushers and the like. And I think, you know, in general, they're probably overvalued. But they, I mean, Etsy was saying, you know, they had 4.7 million people in 45 days join their roles as little merchants. I mean, and these people are not part of the employment data.
David writes in, persons not in labor force only fell by 1.55 million, remains above 100 million persons.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. That's part. Yep. What are they? David, I mean, it's some. I understand that there's all this underground stuff, okay? But there's only so much. We're talking to somebody. I think Shopify. You know, don't quote me on this. I'm not positive. I think Shopify was the one yesterday. Maybe if you can look this up, look, it's trading 20 times sales, David.
No, I get it, and I mentioned that. You know, I'm not saying it's justified. I mean, I have some serious hedges in Shopify. So the more it goes up, the more I'm wrong. And I was the one who had $400, $450, thought it was the buy of the century. But you know, at $1,000, I think it's definitely overvalued. That's my opinion. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but. You know, a lot of that is real. I can't tell you if it's 90% or 70% or 60%, but they've had huge increases in roles, and I think that is not part of the data.
I think it isn't part of the data, but I kind of go back to the eBay of the time where there was trading at some incredible number at one point, David. I went through and I calculated that everybody in the country had to do... like three eBay trades a day for their stock to have like a 15 PE ratio or something. I mean, it was, and then of course the stock pummeled back down and hasn't really recovered much. But I mean, we're talking about what's the outfit that Dan sent around yesterday? He sent me the email that YRC. Those are the guys who are the head of you know what? I better get this exactly if I'm going to say it. It's the their combination of Yellow Freight and Roadway Express.
Right, trucking.
That the government gave them a $700 million loan, saying that they were needed for defense or some BS, and they took 30% of the company's only worth $70 million. The stock. So
yeah, I mean, wasn't that 100 years ago? Another life. I traded that. Wasn't it something like a $40 stock, and it went to like under 5 penny stock?
Yeah. It was a million. These old trucking, this is what I used to do at ICX. Dan and I both worked. And when I called, they were less than truckload company. It's when you see these big, real quick, what a less than truckload company does is if you are sending, and there's a logic to it. There'd be a big truck dock with 50 doors or 60 doors, and cars would, or trucks would run around the city all day, and they'd say, and then David's going to put 3 pallets or 50 boxes or whatever it is, and he's going to send them to Denver. Okay, but it's not a whole truckload. So all the city trucks show up essentially at the dock at 5:30 when the shift is over, and guys spend 5:30 to midnight taking all the stuff from the city trucks, and they throw it on you scrunch it in the truck that's going to Denver or LA or whatever. And there's got to be 60 bills of lading on this truck. It's all pretty much loaded by hand or forklift, but most of it's hand. And you load this thing up, and off it goes. And at midnight, where they're there, the ones that come in from Denver, they pull up and they're full. And guys like me would break them all down, take the 60 different bills of lading that are in the thing, and you'd put it in the appropriate city truck that's going to that area of the city where that thing's going to. That's still a big business, but not as big as it was, because people now do more truckloads or whatever. But that's what these guys did. Okay, but the idea that the federal government, I mean, these hundreds of millions of dollars are like going someplace, David. You can't even look at the valuations of these places. I mean, what's the valuation of that place now? The government gave them $700 million? I mean, for God's sake. I mean,
just looked up Shopify in relationship to that. No earnings, expected to lose $1.16. And Ford for next year, Ford PE on estimated earnings, 1,962, price to book 37.9.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm negative, but I do recognize that, you know, hey, they're adding merchants every single day. And I just mentioned, not for bullish or bearish, you know, as I said, I disclosed I'm a little bit short with some option spreads, but just because it confuses the data and we don't really know what we're looking at in the employment figures.
Well, I mean, you can't, when you look at, I was talking earlier, David, it's hard. I mean, first of all, I honestly believe, I mean, and nobody's ever heard me, you know, very seldom say this, I honestly believe that we have a ways to go with this money pouring in there. That nominally, you have to be, you know, in the market here, because that's where the money's going. The valuations, in the last inflation run we had, the money did not go in the market because the interest rates went up so much that people didn't want a stock to save their life. But now these guys are pouring so much money in that the interest rates aren't even moving yet.
Right.
Okay. But one of these days they will. So my recommendation has been all along to be in the market. I put, you know, $1 million worth this week, for God's sake. But I got to put real tight.
I mean, and you look at some of these things like Tesla. And I have no position, long, short. I'm not making any recommendations, short, long, whatever. But yesterday, they came out and they reported, whatever, 8,000, 9,000, you know, 1,200 calls bought for today's expiration.
Yeah.
$3.50 to $4.50, you know, $80 out of the money with the day to go. And they knew that, you know, the quarterly, you know, car sales for Tesla were going to be reported today, and the stock's up 100. You telling me that nobody had information on that? I mean, come on. How do you buy something for average of $4, $80 out of the money with one day to go? I mean, after a huge, huge run, and now Tesla's, you know, whatever, four times the capital by itself, four times the capitalization of GM and Ford together.
David, man, explain to David that any cheating that gets the market to go higher is a good thing.
Don't you care about your 401k?
I still haven't learned, but I'm coming around way.
If somebody were to buy the puts and it went down, now that guy should be drawn and quartered. But on the way up, it's okay. It's good research.
Unbelievable.
I mean, when we're partying like it's whatever, and yet, I mean, I for one,
yeah, the ones they bought for $4, they're going to be worth $27, $30 today.
Well, when you look at, let's say for instance, David, this year, and the Fed is talking, well, what they're doing, the numbers, right, won't come out till tonight, but we're talking about a money supply increase of probably somewhere between 20% and 35% this year.
Unbelievable.
If the market is only up 15, what does that tell you? It's actually down.
Right.
I mean, it's earlier in the show.
My question is, how is gold not at 1900? And until the last year and a half, I've always been neutral to bearish gold, but it looks to me like it's at least $125 undervalued.
And you know what, David? One day it'll move. You and I will be early as hell, as always. One day it'll move. I'm not getting rid of my long gold spots. One day it'll move, and everybody will tell you that they knew all along it was going to move, right?
To the people who bought it, you know, a day and a half ago and watch it drop $30.
Well, I mean, we sent people. I mean, I'm looking at these retail numbers, and everybody's cheering these retail numbers. The retail's May numbers over June numbers over May was like it was a record increase. Of course, Mays were lousy, but that's okay. Going up is better. But how do you even determine when you've essentially helicoptered money out of a helicopter? That's the name, helicopter money, and you've sent people. I mean, we've got, I'm going to say, the people that are laid off. Let's say it's 10 or 15% of the population. We're sending them unemployment checks that in some cases are 2.5 times what their salary was. And this is going to end in whatever, another however many days, unless it's extended. This is just printed up money sent to people. Now, I'm not saying it's a bad idea or anything like that. I'm just saying, now, and we sent everybody $1,200, even the people that are still working and haven't missed a paycheck. So, what should the, let's put it this way, if the retail sales number came in down, you'd wonder if an asteroid hit the country, for God's sake. I mean, how could they not be up? How do you determine how much up they should be, I guess is the question. You know what I'm saying?
And there's no answer to that, especially with the pandemic, because you don't know, you know, what people have put away versus what they've bet at DraftKings or, you know, in the market itself.
Yeah.
And you don't know what kind of emotion, pent-up demand for consumption that there is. There's no way of knowing.
I used the example earlier. If you had a community of 10,000 people and a sneaky little guy like David ran around one morning and put a $100 bill in everybody's mailbox, and all of a sudden the saloon in the community that weekend has a weekend that's, you know, 5% better than a normal weekend. Is that good or bad? I mean, there's no way it's going to be down, you know. But, I mean, should it be 10%? Should it be 20? How do we even know, Dave? I mean, we're in uncharted waters all over the place here. And I'm going to say that retail sales number looked pretty peaked, considering how much money you're winging at people. Of course,
yeah,
places are closed.
I agree. And I think just overall, you know, when we look at S&P and it's whatever, 3150 roughly, and you take all estimates, you know, for earnings or whatever, 160 down to 120. So let's just say, you know, the market's factoring in all of 2021, and they're factoring in a vaccine and therapeutic and whatever, and not only business back to normal, but that number's going to jump from, let's say, 140, which is midpoint and generous, back to 160. You give the market a 20 multiple, which I think is awfully, awfully generous when you got the 5, 10, you know, monsters carrying the load. 20 multiple and 160 is 3,200. We're there. I just don't know where it's going to, and I'm not bearish, but I just don't see, you know, now all these, you know, Johnny-come-latelys and Mary-come-latelys saying 35, 36, 3,700. I mean, unless there's a tremendous influx of, you know, whatever, immigrants or whatever that are expand the consumer base so much, I just don't see how we get to those numbers.
If you double the amount of money, you're not talking about the market going up. You're talking about the dollar going down.
Okay, I get it. Okay, I guess that's possible.
But I mean, when have you ever seen a situation? And again, for policy, I don't want to see somebody, you know, more people living under the bridge, because we sure have enough of them. But the whole idea, how do you even know what your numbers are? Because I'm going to say, out of the 16 million people that are unemployed, okay, not everybody, if you start looking at fast food workers, amusement park, there are no amusement parks, cashiers, no places open, bartenders, nobody's open, retail, all these people, even though they're out of work, have essentially gotten a raise with nominal money. When has that ever happened? And first of all, why would you do that? Now, even if you keep people on the federal employment, don't you think, and again, I don't want anybody getting less money, don't you think the $600 should drop by 25 a week or something? I mean, we're talking about, we actually have people with printed money with more dough now than when they were working. And we're declaring that the place okay or improve.
So they don't have to go back to work, and they can open up their store on Etsy or Shopify.
Well, there's only it's like a flea market, David. There's only so much money you can make by me selling you crap out of my garage, and next year me buying it back.
I love. That's one of the best analogies ever on this show.
What did Fred Sanford say? One man's treasure is another man's junk. Or
I love that.
S&P futures up 41. You know, I don't mind this when this happens when I'm long for everybody. Although we did sell some calls yesterday, which we probably shouldn't have. You never should sell any calls at this point, for God's sake. NASDAQ futures up 105.
I have plenty of shorts as hedges and income. It's just hard for me to get bullish at this level.
I'm selling calls 7% above the level in a week, and I'm worried if I'm too low.
Right.
It's crazy. Anyway, we'll be back on Monday. Stocks and Jacks, no show tomorrow.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.